Hi, this is Phil Rogers. I'm here with the MLB.com Extras White Sox Edition, and it's been quite a first half for a team that had struggled so much last year, kind of a revamped lineup with Adam Eaton at the top, Jose Abreu in the middle. Really a lot more fun to watch, but wonder if they have enough pitching, if they can find enough pitching to make the improvement that they still think they can make to go from 99 losses a year ago to a playoff contender this year and play important games in August and September. Joined by my MLB.com colleague, Anthony Castrovitz. What's your take been on the White Sox to start off the season?
I think you hit the key word, which is fun. They have been a lot more fun to watch. Last year was definitely not the case. There were times where that lineup could really put you to sleep. But you start with Abreu and what he brings to the equation, and probably exceed. I mean, you don't invest $68 million on a guy if you don't have high expectations for him. But I'm guessing he's exceeded those expectations the White Sox had for him in his first season, and really, the guy's just become a must-watch player. And on that note, I think we'll bring in our MLB.com beat reporter for the White Sox. That's Scott Merkin. Merk, you watch, watch Abreu day in and day out. What stood out to you? Has he exceeded even what you thought? Having watching him in spring training.
Yeah, I was saying a few weeks ago about how if his numbers ended where they were, in early July, 27 home runs and 70 RBIs. That really, people wouldn't complain a lot about that being his first season in the major leagues, and that was, before the All-Star break even. So he's been tremendous, and the most impressive thing is you hear a lot, Phil, you've covered a long time, Anthony, you too. You hear a lot about the great hitters of the game have a specific regimen they follow. Whether they're 0-for-20 or 10-for-20, they don't change things up. They know their routine from flips in the batting cage to what they're doing in batting practice to everything else, their workouts. And Abreu's had that, and they said that he's had that since they had a mini camp, a rookie mini camp, kind of an unofficial mini camp at Camelback Ranch in Arizona back in January. And he's just a real humble kid. He it's all about the team. He talks about himself. He talks about his accomplishments. But I think he doesn't even really fully grasp the players of the month or the rookies of the month. It's just his job, and it's really helping the White Sox get better. I think it's going to be really interesting to see that, they've been much improved this year, and as you guys both pointed out, 100% more exciting than last year. And, they've fought off some of the slumps this year where they couldn't last year, and they just kind of spiraled out of control. But it'll really be interesting to see Abreu in a leadership role just on the field and even somewhat in the clubhouse when this team really takes off, whether that's, the second half of this year or more so 2015 and 2016.
Merk, when you talk about a hitter following the same routine, the same regimen, the best year I've ever seen was Albert Bell's second year with the White Sox, 1998. It was a bad year for the team, but he got on this second half thing, and he was just relentless. And he was out there for early BP with the same pitchers every day. And at the end of that year, he wound up 49 home runs, White Sox record. Mark McGwire's rookie record is also 49 home runs. Abreu projects right along that line. Do you think he can make history in the second half?
Yeah, I think he can. I mean, it's a long season, although it really isn't, we all say the first half, it really isn't split in half. There's fewer games in the second half. But I think the time off he had because of the ankle injury kind of refreshed him a little bit. And I think he can. There's no signs that show he's in for any kind of prolonged slump. And the league has had some time to adjust to him, and he's made adjustments to that. One of the interesting things you see on Abreu is, first of all, you can't make a mistake to the guy, even as a rookie. And again, he's a rookie in quotes, sort of like Tanaka is a rookie and Ichiro is a rookie, in that he's had a lot of previous high-level experience in Cuba. But you can't make a mistake to this guy. If you make a mistake to this guy, he's going to probably hit it 420 feet. But one of the more interesting things you watch is he can look bad on two pitches, maybe low in the zone, or they seem to go after him a lot with off-speed stuff out of the zone, and then make an adjustment and hit the next pitch for a double into the gap, or even hit one for, a go-ahead home run. So I think that will avoid any kind of 6-for-60 type slumps. He's had a couple 1-for-25 runs there, and everyone does. Even the guys who hit, as they say, even the guys who approach 400 make out 6 out of 10 times. So he's almost, I don't want to say he's slump-proof because it's too early in his career to say that, but just the way he goes about business, he seems to make the adjustments quicker or just as quick as the pitchers going against him. So I think he's got a shot to break those records.
The power is what everybody's talked about. I mean, he does hit long home runs, you know, and but he started out the year not hitting for average, striking out a lot. This is a guy that in Cuba, in the Serie Nacional, hit over 400 for, you know, full seasons. And what's really impressed me, you know, before the All-Star break, he was hitting 240 basically at the end of the May, and now he's pushed his average up into the 280s. Does he have enough time left to hit 300 as a rookie, Scott?
You know, I don't know about that, but I think he can, you know, just the way he's going. He played hurt for a little bit there, and I think that affected him. But, you know, like I said, getting that break, getting healthy, where he just, with the tendonitis in his left ankle, where he just didn't do anything for like a week. And that was a time where they kind of backed him off a little bit of his intense pregame work. And, you know, he's adjusted to that too. But I think he can. I mean, he doesn't walk a lot, but he's a somewhat patient hitter up there and that he knows what he wants to do. But I think he's more about right now just the power and the run production. But very well, you know, in his career could be one of those guys. Really just a special type of hitter and just, you know, a huge pickup and really the centerpiece in this reshaping or retooling process that Rick Hahn has undergone with the White Sox. Without him, I'm not sure where they would be right now. He is the kind of fulcrum that makes this thing go.
Mark, another big piece of the retooling, as you say, is Jose Quintana. And really pairing well with Chris Sale at the forefront of that rotation. You know, not a flashy guy by any means when you look at like strikeout rate and things of that nature, but you know, really steady in terms of command. What is a reasonable expectation for him going forward? Are we kind of seeing what he is? Is there more in the tank there, so to speak?
I think if you look at the rotation right now, and you know, the Sox aren't big on saying, well, he's our number one guy, he's our number two guy, he's our number three guy. Don Cooper always has a saying that, you know, whoever's pitching that day is their number one starter. But if you look at it from, you know, from our perspectives, Chris Sale is the ace. He's not only the best pitcher on the Sox staff, but probably, you know, top three starters in Major League Baseball. You throw him in there with Kershaw and Hernandez. That's subjective, obviously, but he's in that team picture of best pitchers in baseball. You got a guy like John Dangs who has bounced back real nicely from his arthroscopic shoulder surgery that ended his 2012 season in August, and he's more of like the Burley type. And Phil, you know what I'm talking about, Mark Burley, and that I think he'll give you double-digit victories, solid efforts almost every time out, 200 innings, 30 starts, and it's a valuable role this day in baseball. You got to have that guy who can help reduce the bullpen in your rotation, not necessarily go out and want to hit the opposition, but has that possibility, but more is steady than anything else. And I think Quintana kind of falls in between there. I think he really does have the potential to be more than just – and what he's doing now is great, but really a top one or two starter in the rotation that can really – you know, the kind of 1-2 punch you need for good teams, and then Danks can kind of fill out the back. And then as Phil talked about, you know, at the beginning of this session, that they need a little more pitching. But, again, as Rick Hahn commented recently, no team is ever comfortable with their pitching. So, yeah, I mean, I think – everyone's always looking for more, but in the Sox case, they really do need kind of someone to jump up and fill the back end of the rotation moving forward.
Yeah, no question about Danks and Burley. I was talking to Paul Konerko early in the year. He made that point that, you know, how Danks had watched Burley when Burley was there, and Danks now wants to be Burley and is driven to have a post-age 30 run like Mark Burley has had, and that would be huge. You know, you do see Dank's name in some trade rumors. I don't know, 2 years left on his contract after this one. It seems like a reach to me. But if the White Sox don't kind of climb the wild card standings a little bit or make a run to get a little bit closer to the Tigers, what do you think would be the biggest trade they might make? It seems like there are multiple players that could be on the market, but who do you think they might get the biggest return for?
Well, I think the guy they had the biggest return and the guy who draws a lot of interest is Alexi Ramirez. But, you know, it's kind of a conundrum because do you trade Alexi and possibly get a huge return? And again, this is, as you said, Phil, assuming that, you know, Rick, just to digress for a second, Rick had a great line during spring training where he said, you never give up a season where you can contend, but it's their job to figure out if it's fool's gold or if it's really a contending team. So, you know, one thing you can say for sure is they're not acquiring any kind of filler pieces or kind of, you know, just guys to get them to the end of the season to kind of push. They're not going to acquire, like, a veteran pitcher who's just going to be with them until September and give up – or until October and give up some younger guys for that. they're getting guys who are going to, you know, fill the plant this year, but also for years to come. So with Alexi, yeah, you could get a big return, but you still have him under control, and you don't really have shortstops in the system behind him. You got a lot of second basemen, but I don't know if you have a pure shortstop to fill the void. So that's the kind of double-edged sword that Rick is looking at there. If you trade him, you could probably get a huge return. Alexi's first All-Star year, he's had a great first half for the White Sox, but then you kind of leave a hole in the middle of an infield. You're kind of searching. You know, Gordon Beckham is a candidate. Dion Viciato is a candidate. I mean, Danks would be in that talk. There's a lot of guys who could. They're going to listen on a lot of guys. But unlike last year where they needed to make the moves to kind of start and speed up this retooling, reshaping process, this year they could make moves, but they don't have to do them. They don't feel like they have to do them before the trade deadline of July 31st. They don't feel like they have to do them before August 31st. This could happen, you know, in 2 weeks. It could happen in the offseason. It could happen at the winter meetings. It could happen in spring training. There's not the rush. There's not the urgency that there was last trade deadline period.
You didn't mention Adam Dunn.
Yeah. Well, Adam Dunn, I mean, you know, Adam Dunn is in his last year of his contract. I forgot Adam Dunn. And, you know, I think it would be good for Adam Dunn, too. He's currently the active leader of most games played without reaching the postseason. And, you know, I think it would be a good thing to give him a shot to go there. And I think they would do that if they found a taker. And you know what you're getting at, Adam. He's a great clubhouse guy. He's a genuine power hitter. There aren't a lot of guys left like that in the game who you know you're going to get 25, 30 home runs and 100 walks. And, you know, he's going to strike out some and probably, you know, not hit 280 or 270. But he's a good piece for a playoff team who needs that one spot to fill. So it'll be interesting to see with just the 1 year left, you know, just this year, what's remaining of this year left on the $56 million deal he signed 4 years. It'll be interesting to see if anyone does take a run at him and see if they can, you know, kind of fit him into a playoff mode there.
You'd think there'd be some interest there just because, you know, the lack of power in general.
Exactly.
You know, it's a rare commodity to acquire midseason right
there. And there's no, like I said, there's no secret about him. You know exactly what you're getting. It's right there in front of you. So it's not like, you know, you're going to get him and say, oh, I didn't know he could do this. This is what Adam does.
You're not going to be surprised when he strikes out a bit, and you're not going to be surprised when he belts one out either. So, yeah.
Exactly.
Well, it'll be an interesting team to watch these next few weeks because they are kind of one of those teams sort of on the fence. They can go any number of ways. You know, certainly some interesting candidates there. But with that, we want to thank Scott Merkin for joining us. My name is Anthony Cashman, joined by Phil Rogers, and this has been MLB.com Extras Chicago White Sox.